Good afternoon, and welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Ted Maxwell. I'll be your host today, and we're broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. For those of you who have not heard Bill's lengthy and very nice intro of me, I'm the president of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and I also am the host of the Jump In Tucson show every Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning. Today, I'll be sitting in for Bill as he takes some well-earned time away, and I hope he's enjoying it. If you are interested in giving us a call during this show, please call into the Buckmaster Live Line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. Well, it's an honor to be hosting the Buckmaster Show for the first time. And by today, you all should have received your mail-in ballots. And even if you are planning on going to the polls on November 5th, it is time to start thinking about all the propositions you're going to have to make a decision on. As you know, if you listen to Jump In Tucson, I talk a lot about the basic right and responsibility that we have as citizens of this country to vote. And most importantly, the fact that you need to be an informed voter. So Bill has asked me to cover all 13 propositions that are going to be on your ballot this year. If you've received it and you haven't opened it yet, it's a good full two pages. And if you plan on going and voting at the polls, get there early because you're going to be spending a lot of time in the booth to review all these. Today, I have the honor of having Nicole Barraza with me to help get through these 13 challenges. She is the Senior Director for Governance and Policy of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. So, Nicole, thank you for joining me today on the radio.
Thanks, Ted. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Nicole is originally from Nogales, Sonora, and is a graduate of South Point Catholic High School. She's earned degrees from both Wesley College and Stanford University. And prior to joining the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, she was an adjunct faculty member at Pima Community College. Now she is going to be sitting she's the current member elect and will be sitting on the Pima Community College Governing Board representing District 1. So congratulations on that. And I always appreciate it when we've got individuals that want to step up and be involved in the community. So I appreciate all you do.
Thanks, Ted.
Now we've talked about this and we've talked about how we should go through the flow. 13 ballot initiatives, 11 of them were referred by the legislature. And two of them are citizens' initiatives. We'll make sure you know how to do that. And if you want to follow along, you've got it, your ballot, please feel free to pull it out because what we've decided to do is we are going to go through these by number. Okay. So with that, Nicole, why don't you go ahead and start us off and talk about Prop 133.
Sure, and just so that your listeners know, you also should have received a voter information pamphlet booklet that kind of looks like a phone book, but you can find more information there about who's supporting and who's opposing. So we'll start off with Prop 133, which is the first one that will appear on your ballot. This one is will forbid any future Arizona election law that conflicts with the state's current requirement for partisan primary elections for partisan offices. So essentially, it's enshrining our current system and voter protecting it, which means it will be extremely hard if, you know, in the future, anybody wants to make some sort of election reform.
It's kind of interesting on this one because this was a legislative referral, and it is a legislative referral that was referred to the ballot in direct opposition of Proposition 140, Make Elections Fair, which we'll talk about later in today's show. But what's interesting is this is effectively taking our current election system, voter protecting it, and once it's voter protected, as I believe we understand it, the only way you can change it then is to go back to the voters. So I find it ironic that the legislature is putting something forward that will prohibit them from doing anything.
Exactly. They won't be able to amend it legislatively unless it's to further the intent of this measure.
Absolutely. And we've seen in the past that furthering the intent sometimes a difficult argument to make. So that's Prop 133. Partisan primary elections is what it will ensure. All right, let's move on to Prop 134.
Prop 134 would require statewide ballot initiatives to gather a percentage of signatures from voters in each of Arizona's 30 legislative districts rather than from the whole state, which is what we currently have. So for citizen initiatives that are looking to make a statutory change, it's 10%, 15% for a constitutional amendment, and this ballot measure wouldn't change the percentage. It would only change how they're able to gather it. So now, signature gatherers focus more on the urban areas, of course, because that's high volume signature gathering ability. So this would require them to go to all of the 30 legislative districts and would essentially give veto power to some smaller districts in the state.
Another interesting thing about this legislative referral, so it was forwarded through the legislature, which means they had to pass the House and the Senate. It does not require any action from the governor. So some of these that we'll see today actually were ones they had passed during the session, but the governor vetoed. And then they brought back, maybe changed it a little bit, and they decided to put it on the ballot. But the thing that's interesting about this one is it's been talked about probably for the last 4, maybe even 8 years on election cycles, but it was always talked about as using the congressional districts. So there's no doubt the easiest place to collect signatures now is in Maricopa County. So 4.5 million, almost 5 million people now. So it's as you said, it's signature gathering, heaven, because it's a lot of people in a small space. Going to 9, there was a lot of people that were concerned about that one, but that's, reasonable. You've got a lot of voters in each one of the congressional districts, but this is going to go to 30. And if you take a look at the breakout of the 30 different legislative districts, they're diverse and they're all over the state. And some are very difficult to get to in an easy manner. And it does allow just one of these small districts, as you said, to hold a citizens' initiative hostage. They can basically veto it.
Something else that I'd like to point out is that regardless of where the signatures are gathered, voters statewide still vote on these measures.
Yeah, everybody has an opportunity ultimately to either approve it or not. And I think it's important to know, and we'll make sure that the listeners are aware, both of these, Prop 133 and 134, are opposed by the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We feel they take the citizens out of the process in a lot of ways. And again, those who've heard me, I'm a true believer that we're a republic. We elect elected officials to make the tough decisions and make the laws. And that's why in this case, putting these to the citizens is not something, at least at SALC, we think is a good idea. All right, let's move on to 135.
Prop 135 stems from the COVID shutdowns. It would limit the governor's emergency powers to 30 days unless extended by the legislature, with exceptions such as for war, floods, or fires.
Now, this one, like Nicole just said, it did come about predominantly because of the COVID governor shutdown orders and the governor's emergency powers. And it just continued and continued and continued. And the legislature was, and I think maybe in some cases rightfully so, that they couldn't come to it. And SALC has no position on this. So when you're hearing us talk now, if we give any opinions, it's our opinions. But it doesn't just cover medical type emergencies. It does have those exceptions with war and fire, but it could be used for anything that the governor decided to impose emergency powers other than that. Is that your understanding?
That's correct.
All right. Well, we're doing pretty good, Nicole. We're a little worried about getting through all 13, but we're coming up. We're going to do Prop 136, and then we'll head to a break after that.
Prop 136 would allow anyone to bring a lawsuit to the regarding the constitutionality of a citizen-initiated ballot measure once it has started collecting signatures. So when citizens want to bring a citizen initiative forward, they must file with the Secretary of State's office before they start gathering signatures. This would allow lawsuits to be brought forth as soon as they file with the Secretary of State. That means that the lawsuits would happen sort of in tandem as citizens are gathering the signatures.
And both 136 and 134 really are targeted at citizens' initiatives. Citizens' initiatives have been with the state of Arizona since our statehood. There's been, I don't know if we've ever done a count, but there's been a lot of citizens' initiatives that have been voted, put to the vote by the citizens and been passed into either law, either statutory, or some even constitutional changes, as you mentioned, the higher signature requirements. But
only 24 states have this form of direct democracy. So we're one of, you know, handful of that have this ability for citizens to bring forward ideas to become law.
And I believe most of those are still out west. Is that correct? I mean, I think as the United States grew and a lot of the western states were a little bit more freewheeling, a little bit more independent, a lot of the states wanted to have their way to ensure their citizens could help state the law, not just those elected officials. So, all right, we've gotten through over a third of them. That's a good start. This portion of the Buckmaster Show was presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and for lunch. Treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, which includes the famous Danish Kringle, and I believe now you can also get a nice cold beverage as well. So a lot to see at Mona's Danish Bakery. If you want more information, you can go to Mona's Danish Bakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back at the break, and we've still got another 9 to go.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I'm your guest host today, Ted Maxwell, and with me I have Nicole Braza, the Senior Director for Governance and Policy from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We're going through the 13 ballot propositions, because they're no longer initiatives or legislative referrals. They're now all ballot propositions. And we've made it through the first four, so let's move on to Prop 137.
Prop 137, judicial retention elections. Let me start with a little background first. So in 1974, Arizona voters agreed to scrap elections for judges in the largest counties. This was Maricopa, Pima, Pinal, who have more than 250,000 people in the county. Coconino decided to join, and they did it through a citizen initiative process as well. So the largest counties scrapped elections in favor of a merits election process in which the governor fills vacancies for judgeships subject to the nomination by a judicial nominating commission. And full disclosure, I serve on the Pima County Commission on Trial Court Appointments. So advertise, vet candidates, screen them, interview them, and then send names up to the governor, and the governor appoints. Then the judges stand for a re-election. When they're first appointed, they can be elected after serving 2 years. And then for the Arizona Supreme Court and the appellate court judges, they go up for retention election every 6 years after their first 2 year. And for Superior Court judges, they serve 4 year terms. So essentially, this proposition is proposing that we give judges a lifetime appointment and allow them to remain in office during good behavior. There are some violations that could merit them having to stand for re-election, for election: a conviction of a felony offense, a conviction involving fraud or dishonesty, or a declaration of bankruptcy or foreclosure. In addition, they could also have to go up for election if it's determined by the members of the Commission of the Judicial Performance Review that they did not meet their judicial performance standards. Also, for reference, for instance, and here in Pima County, we will be voting for 16 Superior Court judges, 2 appellate court judges from Division II, and 2 from the Supreme Court. So we'll be voting for a total of 20 judges during this election season. And the Judicial Performance Review Commission puts out a detailed grading system, so to speak, about the judges. And I'd like to point out that all of the judges that are up for election for Pima County voters have passed. What this initiative will also do is, because it's now going forward giving them lifetime appointments, it will make your current vote for this election void if this initiative passes. So if some of the judges are voted out and this proposition passes, essentially they would still be able to stay in office.
And I will add to that, this is somewhat a result of the fact that 2 of the current Supreme Court judges are up for their review, and they both received it's not necessarily an endorsement, but they received the favorable findings from the judicial review process. So they're being recommended to also get reinstated or elected to another term. There is a 70-year age restriction currently, and if this passes as well on these judges, so at the age of 70, they have to step down. So it's a lifetime, but not really, because at the age of 70, they have to step down. But that has kind of been one of the twists to this one, I'd say. Interesting enough, I did not know that until 1974, the judges had to run for office every 6 years.
Well, and they still do in smaller counties, right?
Right.
But where the understanding is that people know more who these people are. And so it sort of eliminated or took out the politics side for these important positions. And so...
And I think that's one that across the board, a lot of people would say there are a lot of positions that currently we're electing that should probably be nonpartisan races in general. I mean, you can argue that the sheriff should be nonpartisan. You can argue that the county attorney should be nonpartisan. There's no doubt we want our judges to be nonpartisan because nobody, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're vocal on, but if you're a vocal advocate on either side and you run into a judge that happens to have different political leanings than you, that it can't help but, I'm going to assume all judges do their job well, but it's going to have an influence. So this is an interesting one. The big thing is it was put forward based on trying to protect a couple of Supreme Court judges in some part. And there are some people that believe it's ridiculous we have 20 judges on all of our ballots because how many of us know anything about those judges?
Well, but I would like to point out that judicial performance review, which gets mailed
Absolutely.
Out, and you're welcome to open it up and see, you know, the sort of the marks that each judge got.
And what Nicole's saying is we have to be informed voters. So if you're going to vote to either non-retain or retain a judge, read that judicial review and see how they are being supported. Now, SALC, for the record, has no position on this proposition, as well as we didn't say it directly, but 135 and 136, we also had no position. It was just the first two that we've taken a position on. All right. You called it, Nicole. You said at the break that we're probably going to talk about 137 longer than we thought. So let's we've got plenty of time to cover Prop 138. Let's do that before we get to the bottom of the hour.
Sounds good. Prop 138, Tipped Workers Protection Act. This was a referral by the legislature that was initiated due to a citizen initiative that was gathering signatures. They didn't gather enough, so they're not on the ballot. That was trying to get... rid of the tipped workers credit and also raise the minimum wage. So this is this was in response to that possibility. So this proposition would protect the tipped workers credit, which would allow employers to pay workers up to 25% less than the minimum wage as long as their total income, including tips, equals at least the minimum wage plus $2 per hour, with compliance averaged over the payroll period. Something to keep in mind is that the minimum wage in Arizona and in Tucson will be going up in January, according to the Consumer Price Index. So for Arizona, currently it's $14.35. It will go up to $14.70. And for Tucson, it will go up to $15 come January. So in essence, this... would allow employers to pay 25% less, so that would be $11.02 an hour, provided that their tipped workers make at least $16.70 per hour.
And I'd say there's two things to importance in this. There's some folks that think there shouldn't be any credit at all, and the servers should get the same minimum wage as everybody else. However, in the tip, we are such a temp conscious community or society. It's ingrained in the American way of life. We always tip. We like to either reward good service. And, you know, personally, I always give a tip. It's just whether it's going to be 15, 10, 15% or 20, 25, maybe more if it's incredible service. But the fact in the restaurant industry, at least on a full service restaurant, the majority of the servers are making well above minimum wage. And everybody says, well, this is going to hurt them. And it's not going to change anything in the system other than it will now be based on 25%, so as minimum wage, they can take more credit against it. But what people are also missing on this current minimum rules require the tipped wage employer, so the employer, the owner, has to pay minimum wage minimum over the pay periods. Now this takes it up to minimum wage plus $2 an hour over those same periods. So there is some benefit to the tipped worker as well, but SALC is strongly supporting this one. We believe that it's how our industry works. And ultimately, any changes that impact the ability for an industry, and most tip services industries are very small margins, is just going to result in higher costs to everybody else. And a lot of tipped employees are in favor of this as well.
And, you know, I read recently that the average per hour for a tipped employee in Arizona is about $22 an hour or more. What this does is it guarantees that they're going to make at least $2 more than the minimum wage. But going by the average that I just mentioned.
I know Grant Kruger, who, again, disclosure, is an SALC member. He also hosts Jump in Tucson on Wednesdays. He's the owner proprietor of Union Public House, Proof Restaurant, as well as Reforma and a Maverick. And in his career here in Tucson, he has never had to pay a tipped employee the minimum wage because they've always received well above that. It's really kind of a trend right now in the restaurant industry to actually see assistant managers do shifts as servers. It's a way of improving their way in life because they make more as a server than they do when they're doing their assistant manager role. So we've hit six, so we've fallen a little behind. We knew those two would probably give us a challenge. But real quick, we went over the primary partisans, the partisan primary elections, the initiative referendum, Prop 134, both of those SALC is opposed to. We also covered Prop 135, the governor's emergency powers, the ballot measures challenge is 136, the Judicial Accountability Act is 137, and we just finished with 138, the Tipped Workers Protection Act, and SALC supports that one as well. The three in the middle we are taking no position on. So what do we have to look forward to when we come back, Nicole?
We're going to start with the abortion access proposition.
So I'm going to tell you right up front, that one we're going to talk about, and then we're probably not going to talk about it. So it's a very difficult one. It's one I think everybody's got some feelings on, but we'll give you the details you may need to know to help you make a decision. So you're listening to the Buckmaster Show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Ted Maxwell sitting in for Bill, and we will hope you stay with us to hear about the rest of the ballot.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
the extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay and Cloth in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from southern Mexico, including Oaxaca, Puebla, Merida, and Hidalgo. Also discover amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. Clay and Cloth also has an incredible selection of new Dia de los Muertos merchandise. See the selection on Instagram at Mad Max the Dog Shop and visit Clay and Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 310 South Convent, just south of Cushing.
Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your home and gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to Zocalo Village and all those fine Mexican and Latin America imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and at zocalovillage.com as well. So welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm glad you stayed around for the second half. We've covered six of the 13 ballot propositions. If you are interested in joining the conversation or you have a question, please call into the Buckmaster Live Line, which is being presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property. And that number, if you want to call in, is 520-790-2040. All right, Nicole, we've been making some progress. I appreciate your insight. Now we're up to the one you kind of teased before we went off, Prop 139.
Well, this is one that voters have been hearing a lot about since it was gathering signatures, right? So this is Prop 139 establishes a fundamental right to abortion that the state cannot deny, restrict, or interfere with before fetal viability. So the general benchmark for fetal viability is about 24 weeks of gestation, 22 to 24, give or take. It would also allow a healthcare provider to determine if an abortion is necessary to protect the life of the mother or to protect the mental health of the pregnant woman. So this would supersede any other current state law, such as the one that was signed by Governor Ducey in 2022, and that has received much attention in the media after Roe versus Wade got overturned.
Absolutely. And for those who don't know, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council is a public policy organization, and we try to view things through a business lens. And this is one of those propositions that is a lot about personal choice and personal feelings. So we won't go into any more details on 139. Goes back to the fact, if you want to find out what people are saying about it, supporters opposed to it, refer to your ballot pamphlet that you received. It is the size of a small phone book, unless you're like some people who accidentally pick up the one that if you see the size of the one that's for those who need reading glasses like I do, it's really thick. But be informed. That's the biggest thing on this one. Be informed. Know what it's going to be if you vote yes, and know what it's going to be if you vote no. All right, now we're going to go on to one that SALC and several of our members are strongly behind, and that's Prop 140, Make Elections Fair.
Yes, and we'll talk about it briefly today, but there's also two op-eds in today's paper that talk a little bit more about it. So Prop 140 would open primaries for state, county, and congressional offices. All candidates for the same office would collect the same minimum number of petition signatures and appear on the same ballot. Currently, depending on the position the candidate's running for, independent and non-affiliated candidates have to collect up to six times as many signatures. The proposal would also give everyone eligible to vote for office the ability to vote for any candidate and sign any candidate petition, regardless of party affiliation. Parties are still allowed to endorse and support candidates, and the proposal would also allow candidates to list their party affiliation. There would be a disclaimer saying that they're not necessarily endorsed by the party. This would also prohibit public monies to be used for partisan primaries in the city of Tucson and in the presidential preference elections that is not open to all voters.
So this is one of the ones we can go into a lot of depth about, but I just want to kind of address some of the things that people see as concerns and as benefits from it. Obviously, I think there's a lot of folks who are not happy with the candidates we get. There's also in our state, because we have 25 of our 30 legislative districts that are safe, in theory, leads to situations like today where in eight of the legislative districts, there is no Senate election because only one party ran. And in 15 of the House districts, there's either no election, that's in two of them, because there's only two candidates, or you're facing what's called a single shot. And both of the Republicans and the Democrats have figured out that's a good way to try to make inroads in a district that may not lean their way. And therefore, the party that's in the minority only runs one. But the fact of it is there's very few general elections that have really contested races by the time we get down to the general. So that, therefore, the primary, where you get about 30% of each party, 15% of the Arizona population on each side, deciding all those elections. And that's, I think, one of the arguments that you're going to hear for it.
Yes.
Now, if we go to the arguments that you're going to hear against it. So what you're going to hear is there's a lot of folks that when I'll talk to them about 10-140, they'll say, oh, that's the RCV. The RCV, ranked choice voting initiative.
And it's not.
But it's not. So do you want to talk about a little bit about what is not guaranteed is how the general election is going to go. And you want to talk a little bit about the role of the legislature and the governor and the options they have?
So proponents of Prop 140 really wanted to focus on the primary. And they are really agnostic as to what happens in the general for a variety of reasons, including, you know, you talk to a group and they're all for ranked choice voting. You talk to another group and they're totally against it. So they left the general election up to the legislature, and the governor would have to sign. But the legislature already has this power. It's not a new power that this proposal is granting them. So the legislature would, in essence, have to decide how many candidates advance from the primary to the general election. If it's two, then essentially the general election would look exactly like we have right now. If they decide that more than three candidates would advance from the primary, then that would trigger the use of ranked choice voting. And the reasoning behind that was that if you don't have ranked choice voting, then if there's more than three candidates, the winner could be the winner with, you know, 20% of the vote versus a majority vote. So that was the reasoning behind including that if more than three candidates advance to the general.
Yeah, I know there's arguments against it that say it's going to result in multiple additional elections and delay the process. It doesn't. It does it automatically. It's a system used in several states. So the only opportunity to ensure that somebody's got 50% of the votes that still are being counted, because as people drop off, you're going to get your second choice instead of your third, is to do some sort of RCV in this case. But my personal belief is the legislature is never going to go there. If they're going to do something, they're going to do top two because it's the thing they're most familiar with. And then you're going to have these districts that don't have general elections have a possibility of having a general election. Because remember, when I threw out those eight and two on the House, it's not just that they don't have general elections. It means the minority party, whether it's Republican and Democrat, and it exists on both sides, there are safe Republican and safe Democrat districts, those folks and the majority of the independents never get to vote for their state representative, ever. And so that's why I think you've seen people get behind it. I've used the language a lot of times. If you like what we're getting now and you like the system now, then don't vote for it. But if you are unhappy with what we're getting now and the way the system's working out for us now, then that's a possibility. So anything you want to close with on this one before we move on?
Something, Nicole, that I just want to point out is that the opponents of this proposition are falsely arguing or focusing on the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State would only get to decide if the legislature and the governor cannot agree on how many candidates advance to the general election. So a lot of the mailers that have been sending out and things that have been posted on social media are falsely stating or just focusing on the Secretary of State, which is not the case.
And that's a good point. And if you do take a look at those who are opposed to this, you're going to see a lot of the folks who benefit from the current election system on both sides of the aisle are opposed to this. So it's something that's getting them a little concerned because it won't be as easy to manipulate who the voters get the options to choose from. So I think we've probably gone overboard on that one we want. So let's, before we go to break, let's finish up with Prop 311 and the first responders' death benefit.
So Prop 311 would create a $250,000 death benefit to the families of first responders killed in the line of duty. Currently, there's a federal benefit of up to $448,000. This is a one-time payment in both cases. And for the state benefit, it would sunset in 2033. Now, this would be paid by a $20 fee that would be imposed on all criminal fees to help pay for these benefits. And this would also sunset in 2033.
I think that's a big point to stress. This is something that is, it does have a sunset on it. It will be over in 10 years. And it really comes down to, I think a lot of people are going to see the benefit that you get to the first responders who put their lives on the lines. And if something happens to them, I think everybody's supportive of that. Arguments against maybe the fact that it's adding $20 to people who maybe don't have the money even to just pay the fees that they're facing at the time. But again, this is no, SALC has no position on this one, and certainly not much more to add to that one.
No, so I'll go on to
again, if you've got questions about who's supporting and who's not, refer to that ballot pamphlet, and we are going to go to a break right now. We'll come back and finish off the rest of them and have any more conversation that anybody might want to have. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan and half-cent sales tax. They are both effective through June 30th, 2026. For the region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, the RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm your guest host, Ted Maxwell. I'm sitting in for Bill today as he takes some well-earned time away. If you are interested in giving us a call, please call into the Buckmaster Live Line. It's presented by the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The number is 790-2040. So we've been talking about the ballot propositions. Everybody should have gotten their ballot in the mail by now. If you haven't, and you don't have it by Friday, make sure you give a call. And we will, they will make sure that you get a ballot in time to get it turned in through the mail, or if you need to drop it off. So that's good. Appreciate you staying with us. Our friends over in Silver City and Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there is so much to do in Silver City and in Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty to see, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. And I really need to thank Tom Fairbanks for keeping me on track as we go through all this. He's doing a great job behind the glass, as always. And I'm truly appreciative of Bill for giving me the opportunity to host his show for him. I know he's got a lot of pride and faith in the people he puts out there, but it's important for this show to be done right. All right, so we're in the home stretch, Nicole. We've got four more, two of which are going to be pretty lightly touched, but why don't we start, because we said we're going in order. We'll start with Prop 312.
Prop 312, property tax refund. This would allow a property owner to apply for a primary tax refund for expenses caused by a city, town, or county adopting a policy, pattern, or practice which declines to enforce existing laws or the maintaining of a public nuisance on or near the owner's real property.
Now, this applies both to commercial real estate as well as to personal property, correct?
Yes.
And what it's obviously what's got its attention and why this was put forward by the legislature to the citizen, because it also was a legislative referral. For the record, the only two citizens' initiatives that we're voting on this year are Prop 139, the Abortion Access Act, and Prop 140, Make Elections Fair. So the rest of them have been referrals, if we didn't say that as we went through them. So 132 is really about collecting actual expenses. It doesn't include the loss of value of your property. It's got to be demonstrated expenses that the commercial owner or the homeowner have proven and have been accepted by the municipality being they're trying to hold accountable for lack of enforcement of their current nuisance laws. This really has grown out a lot of our increase in the state of homelessness population, but also of perceived unenforced drug use and the damage that can be done. And we know on the business side, we've got lots of examples. I'm sure there's plenty on the personal side as well. But do you see this being more of a commercial property thing, a personal property thing? Do you have your gut telling you anything?
It could be both. I mean, my homeowners association, we were talking about maybe perhaps hiring a security company to come and patrol our neighborhood. So, all these types of expenses, it's not just the property damage. It's also the costs incurred trying to mitigate the problems that we're seeing in our community.
Well, that's a great point on the property side, because one of the beliefs is that the personal property homeowners are going to have a hard time, because more than likely the municipality is going to argue it and it's going to end up in court to be settled. The funds that you expend on the commercial side, and I know we've got at least one of our members at SCLC's put out probably about $180,000 this year in total for his commercial properties, providing them either increased security or cameras or fencing. He's put out $240,000 so far this year, and his annual property tax is about $180,000. So if he was able to file, get this, there'd be a difference of $60,000 that he has expended, but he can't claim. What happens to that $60,000?
Well, the property owner would flip to the next year.
Right. So it's a carryover. So they can collect it later. And I think the belief is that it's the commercial property owners, the business owners, who are going to have an opportunity to use this more. The unique thing about it is the money will come straight out of the shared state revenue. So the city doesn't have to, the city or the town or the municipality, the county or whoever it's the municipality that served, doesn't have to write the check. It's going to come out of what they would have gotten back from the federal government. Again, the city has the municipality has the opportunity to say, we don't concur with it. And then it's more than likely going to end up, I don't think they've established a process yet other than the court system beyond that.
Well, and an important provision is that the municipality would be on the hook for attorney fees for both sides.
For both sides.
Yes.
If they lose.
Regardless.
Oh, even if they win? Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's an interesting one. That's a change. All right. That's Prop 312, the property tax refund. Let's move on to Prop 313, which has to do with sex trafficking, life imprisonment.
Prop 313 would mandate a life sentence without the possibility of release for an adult convicted of a Class 2 felony for child sex trafficking. This is it was a referral, and it passed in a bipartisan manner in the Senate and along party lines in the House. So there was a little bit more controversy once it went to the House. So this would basically mean no parole, probation, or suspended sentence for somebody convicted of child sex trafficking.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to agree sex trafficking is a terrible thing, especially for children. It's terrible for anyone, but for children it's heinous, in my word. So I think this is one that's probably going to get a lot of support. I think the only concern that I've heard anybody register is it doesn't give the judicial branch any flexibility in sentencing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those who are being exposed through sex trafficking also could find themselves caught up in it if they happen to be an adult.
Yes. And just for listeners to note that the current sentencing is anywhere between 3 to 35 years.
Yeah. So right now the judicial system has a lot of flexibility. This would take a lot of that away. All right. Let's move on to Prop 314, the Border Security Act.
Prop 314, this is one that SALC is opposing. It's listeners might remember the 2009 SB 1070-esque bill. This is an unfunded mandate that seeks to address illegal immigration. It would make illegal border crossings a state crime and allow law enforcement to detain individuals suspected of crossing illegally and give state judges the power to order deportations. It would also require legal status checks for public benefits by using E-Verify and Save, and it would increase penalties for fentanyl sales that cause death. It's important to note that a bipartisan group of county attorneys, including the Pima County Attorney, Cochise County Attorney, and the Yuma County Attorney, released a joint statement calling for this not to be referred, which it ultimately was. The Pima County Sheriff and the Santa Cruz County Sheriff are also opposing. And something important for listeners to know is that the estimated costs, according to the legislature, would be $325 million per year. And this would be the cost for arresting, prosecuting, and incarcerating these individuals that, you know.
And as Nicole mentioned, it's an unfunded mandate. There was no dollars put forward by the legislature to cover that $325 million, which means it's going to come out of the local municipalities' budgets, which impact predominantly border communities like ours. So it's one that SALC is opposed to. Let's go on. Believe it or not, we've made this all the way to the end, and 315 is probably going to be a fairly quick conversation.
Yes. So last but not least, Prop 315 would require the legislature to approve any new rule that would cost the state over $500,000 within 5 years, and would require rules expected to cost more than $100,000 within 5 years to be reviewed by the Office of Economic Opportunity. So it would require basically legislative approval for executive branch functions.
And I think that's the somewhat concern, if there's a concern with it, is the legislature is trying to take control of what's predominantly an administrative responsibility, managing their own budgets as they go through it. So it is another one of those, if you really want the details, get into that voter pamphlet and take a look. Nicole, it's been great having you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate all you do, and you've been giving these kind of briefings to many folks. You've been on the radio. You've been doing it to other business organizations, so I appreciate all your knowledge on this topic. One thing I'd like to close with is make sure that if you're doing mail-in ballots, which I am, and by the way, both parties are strongly encouraging people to do those mail-in ballots, fill them out and get them in early. If you take them in and walk them into the ballot to the poll place, you're delaying the process for the results. So get everything in there, get informed, vote, and tune in tomorrow to listen to the Buckmaster Show again at noon. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great day.